When she began her journey, she didn't know what lay ahead. But as with all things, time passes, and suddenly she finds herself in the middle of a place she never expected. Looking back, she knows that the happily ever after isn't the ending, it's the beginning. I'm Heather Songster, and this is Hopelessly Romantic. Welcome, readers and romance seekers, to a very special episode. Today is our one-year anniversary. Who knew, right? As today got closer and closer, I couldn't get over how crazy it is. I feel like it was just so recent, sitting down and typing out my first script, reading my first book, posting my first episode. It's been amazing, and I'm so lucky that I get to do this. Today, we aren't reading anything new. Instead, I am looking back at this past year, the good, the bad, and the wild, to find what I thought was the best, what my favorites were. I want this to be an annual tradition because who doesn't love lists? I know I do, that's for sure. But first, let's take a small trip down memory lane. When this podcast first started, we were not hopelessly romantic. Oh no. We began as Heather Reads, the podcast. Before then, before I ever clicked record on my equipment, I was working with H. Reads Harlequin. This project had long been in the works, several years actually. I've probably been toying with this idea since 2017 in some shape and form. In 2019, I finally bought the first novel to review, and as we know, this time last year, May 2021, I finally released my first episode under Heather Reads, the podcast. I'd been fighting with the name for a long time. I was pretty attached to H. Reads Harlequin, but I realized that it would limit what I was looking to accomplish with my podcast. I didn't want to stick with only Harlequin, even though Harlequin was my bread and butter at the beginning. And while I was pretty satisfied with Heather Reads the podcast, it wasn't a name that really told everyone what it was that I did, reviewing erotic romance novels. Despite all of that, though, I went ahead and launched the podcast. I was more or less fine with it until my technical advisor approached me with a new title idea. Instantly, I hated it and loved it at the same time. I loved it because it was absolutely perfect and hated it because it was too perfect to leave alone. And that's how I found myself completely rebooting my own freaking podcast when I was only 7 episodes in. But I'm happy I did. Hopelessly Romantic has become such a wonderful part of my life, and I don't know if Heather Reads the podcast would have made it this far. I can already hear my technical advisor tell me that of course it could, but I am not so convinced. He also insists that I could absolutely run the podcast and all its accompanying technological needs all on my own if I so chose, but I know that's not true. I really underestimated the backside of running a podcast, just beyond hitting buttons on the recording software. It is an ocean of technological reefs, and without my amazing first mate running the workings of the ship, I could not be an effective podcast captain. I think that metaphor got away from me, but you get my meaning. So, to my technical advisor, Kwang Yun, thank you for everything, thank you for your support, and thank you for not justifiably ditching me when I go crazy buying piles of books. Speaking of piles of books, let's have a celebration today. This past year, we looked at 25 romance novels, and I have ranked them based on several factors. These are drama, romance, spice, realism, and how I liked the cover. On occasion, I'll bust out a special category, world building, for those novels that break real-world rules. After I've scored the novels on a scale of 1 to 5 in each of these categories, I'll announce my final score. This score doesn't always reflect on how the novel scored on the above list. The novel could get straight ones and still make it high on the overall score, mostly because there is no such thing as a perfect book. Realism might score low, but romance scores high, and trying to mash the two together isn't exactly fair. Depending on how I feel about the score, the book will go onto one of three shelves. There's the everything shelf, which I've never bothered naming until just this moment, because it doesn't need a name. It's just where a majority of the books live after I've read and reviewed them. Then there is the dreaded shelf of shame. These books that make it here have to really earn it. I like to think that I'm pretty forgiving as far as these books go. There's more than a few, quote, bad books on the everything shelf, but they didn't piss me off badly enough to merit the punishment. And then we have the gold star shelf. These are the cream of the crop, the best and my favorites that I've read. These also have to earn their place, and they might have to work harder than the Shelf of Shame residents had to fail. I don't give these out lightly, and often they make it to the shelf if I believe they challenge something that I took for granted, or they presented a topic that I think should be presented more often in erotic romance novels. Of course, the books on the Everything Shelf might score high in my personal opinion, but I don't think that they were really a good fit to join the other gold stars, and the reverse can also be true. The gold stars might not always fit my idea of a good book. I try to judge them all objectively as what they are, erotic romance. The Shelf of Shame residents, however, it's a given that they were neither an enjoyable read for me or a good romance. They know what they did. Aside from my judgment criteria, we've also named a few tropes along the way. These are simply themes that I see repeated over and over as we go along reading all the different books. Two of the most prolific of these tropes are Spark of Something and the Third Act Separation. Spark of Something occurs when our two main intendeds get together and are drawn together for some reason that isn't really well explained. Many books will tell us, rather than show us, what the characters see in each other. I've had rant after rant about show don't tell, so I'll leave it alone today. But usually what happens is, Person A wonders what Person B sees in them, and Person B will tell us right out, even if we might not see these qualities for ourselves. Spark of Something can get a little annoying, but considering that erotic romance novels tend to cover short amounts of time, it's useful to get our lovebirds going. An adjacent trope would be the romance reheat button, where our characters already know one another, and at one time might have had a thing going. This helps avoid the Spark of Something trope, since they already know each other, and we don't have to go too much deeper into why they get together. As for third act separation, it's basically what it says on the tin. It's the last act of our novel, even if a three-act structure isn't in place, and our two mains, for whatever reason, are torn apart purely for the sake of drama. If I'm frustrated by any trope, it's third act separation, partly because it's repetitive. Nearly every single one of these novels runs into this trope one way or another, and frankly, I'm bored with it. It's not as fun when every time a couple splits, and I know that they'll end up together anyway. There are very few uses of the third act separation that I'll tolerate, and one such use is when outside forces have to take our characters apart. She Dreamed of a Cowboy from episode 2 would be a good example. Two of the tropes that I named early on are among my favorites, dead women and horses. Dead women is interesting because I see it most often on the side of the male half of these romances. Either it's a sister or most likely a long-term partner. This poor, unfortunate woman had been the love of his life or the apple of his eye, and she simply had to die to allow our hero to upgrade to brooding hero. One theory a friend and I hold is that dead women showcases a level of safety for our heroine. It's dangerous dating these days. Creeps, abusers, ghosters galore, and it's a metaphorical minefield trying to find a guy who isn't going to turn you into a lampshade. A way to solve this potential anxiety for our reader is to deploy the dead woman. Her life was lost through no fault of her own, cancer is a big one, but the lover she left behind still carries the torch. It proves to us, the readers, that our hero is safe, that he loved and cared for a woman so deeply that she trusted him with her most fragile and vulnerable moments, and that he still carries love for her still. We can see that he can commit to a relationship and will care for his lady love as best as we could wish. It also ramps up the drama when he still carries grief and sometimes undeserved guilt, preventing him from fully falling in love at the start and giving our wonderful heroine a chance to fix him. What a wonderful gift, isn't it? As for horses, well, who doesn't love horses? I sure do. I take weekly riding lessons, fulfilling every horse girl dream that I've ever had, simply for the love of all things equine. And I'm not a lone horse girl either, oh no. There are entire genres of romance novels that cater to that exact demographic. I'll get to my favorite later on, but just know that horses are quite popular as a story hook. So like I said before, I want to talk about the best and the worst of the last year. But before then, I want to go over some honorable mentions. These will have come from the Everything Shelf, the ones that didn't make it all the way to either the Gold Star Shelf or the Shelf of Shame, but they still hold a special place in my heart nonetheless. And I really have to start with our very first novel, Crown Prince's Bought Bride. It may not hit the way that other novels have, but because it was the book that started us off way back when we were still Heather Reads the Podcast, it does have a special place on the bookshelf. I mentioned before that I actually bought this book several years ago, in early 2019. I was still rolling the idea of the podcast in my mind, and I wasn't really sure where it would go. The Heather that bought the book is a different person than the Heather that eventually read the book, and I'd like to think that I'm still a different Heather today. At the time, I was trying to go straight for the humor, or at least the early drafts of the episode tried. I still want to be funny, but I also need to balance out an actual review alongside the jokes. Hopefully I've gotten better at it, and with luck, I'll continue to improve. I gave Crown Princess Bob Ride a final score of 2 out of 5. Personally, I thought the concept was preposterous. Little did I know what I would have in store with novels to come. My big beef with the novel boiled down to the fact that the way Prince Remy handled his problems, mostly by forcing Maddie to marry him and removing most, if not all, of her agency. I especially had a problem with how the characters felt. I believe I said that they felt like plastic people in a plastic world. Then there was the fact that the novel had a strange obsession with Maddie's virginity, and again, if I only knew what was in store. Crown Prince's Bought Bride was a rough read, but as it was the first, I might look back at it with some rose-colored glasses. Next up, let's take a peek at Beauty and the Werewolf by Mercedes Lackey. This book is special simply because I love Mercedes Lackey. I love her work, especially her Heralds of Valdemar series. You've heard me probably talk extensively about this series on Behind the Page. This novel was for episode 13, which was lucky because it was our Halloween episode. I certainly didn't plan it out that way, the 13th episode being released at the very end of October, but I think it worked out quite nicely. Beauty and the Werewolf is probably the best example of a low-scoring novel, despite how much I loved the book. As I mentioned before, I have to consider certain aspects of these novels, and then altogether judge the book as a romance novel. Beauty and the Werewolf is exactly up my alley, so to speak. It approaches a well-known fairy tale, Beauty and the Beast, and shakes it up to paint a different picture. The story comes from a larger universe, the world of the 500 kingdoms. Here there are a myriad of different kingdoms, obviously, and they are looked after by a group of powerful women known as godmothers. The novel that I read for the podcast appears to be the last in the 6-book series, and features the romance between our heroine Bella and our werewolf-stricken hero Sebastian. There are elements of other fairy tales in the story, notably Red Riding Hood and Cinderella, and I really enjoyed the explanation of the tradition, as it's called, as the force that drives these tales into one story. One thing that stood out to me when I found this book was that it came from the now-defunct Harlequin imprint Luna, which seemed to cover the fantasy side of their romance novels. Alas, it must not have done so well since they no longer seem to be operating the imprint. So imagine my enormous surprise when I found Beauty and the Werewolf sitting among other novels in the bookstore last year. Albeit it was in the fantasy section rather than romance, but still. As I said before, Beauty and the Werewolf got a low score from me, 2 out of 5. And this is simply because it didn't read like an erotic romance novel. It read like a fairy tale retelling. That's not bad, of course, but it came from Harlequin and was promoted as romance. While I loved the book, it simply didn't hit the mark for what we expect out of our romance novels. And finally, for our honorable mentions, I'll bring up Master of the Mountain by Cherise Sinclair. This novel was unique because I had already read it. I tell the whole story in episode 20, but the short version is that the author of Master of the Mountain was recommended to me by a coworker, and I quickly became hooked on Sinclair's Master of the Shadowlands series. I read Master of the Mountain a little bit later on, but I fully enjoyed the story. The reason I picked Master of the Mountain for the podcast was simple. I was so sick of the so-called erotic romances on a spice level of bland oatmeal, and I wanted to bring out the big guns. I knew that Master of the Mountain had what I wanted, so I ordered a paper copy for the bookshelf and extolled the virtues of BDSM erotica. Master of the Mountain, I feel, signaled a beginning of the new era of the podcast, and that's evident even in the bookshelf itself. There's maybe one book that sticks out in the line of uniform Harlequin spines, but once we hit Master of the Mountain, there's all sorts of shapes. It broke me out of my Harlequin groove, and I am all the happier for it. Now, let's get into the good stuff, and what better place than to start with our Shelf of Shame. We have three residents in this most dreaded of categories, and they all landed there purely because reading these books pissed me off in one way or another. First up, we have Cold Case Colorado. This one is infamous simply because it is, to this date, the only novel that needed two episodes to get through it. These are episodes 3 and 4. One of my biggest complaints is that it was so dense it would give fruitcake a run for its money. I called it an info dump parading as a book, and I still hold to that opinion. The book just threw plot point after plot point at us, and I felt as though the author was trying to impress us by being complicated. This is very much my personal opinion, of course. It rated higher on Goodreads than I expected, but that's not a huge surprise. Authors have their fans, and I'm not any different when I read my favorites. But Cold Case Colorado was a jumbled mess. If it wasn't Ty being an absolute prick, judging other characters on their supposed masculinity, it was the book's insulting take on depression and suicide, or it was the fact that I couldn't keep facts straight since it kept throwing things at me. It promised us a locked door mystery, and it was waved away with the most simple of explanations. And for whatever reason, the narration was constructed in a way that made reading difficult. There were facts that I tried to take note of, but when I went to go back to check them, they vanished. It was a frustrating read, to say the least. Of course, we can't ignore the fact that it took me 2 whole episodes to properly go over the novel. I'm willing to admit that this could be a result of my inexperience at the time. I'd be curious to see if I could create the same work today than when I'd read it for the very first time, but still, it was a hard book to get through, and it earned its place on the shelf of shame. Next up, we have The Princess and the Surgeon from Episode 9. This novel ended up here purely for the fact that it was boring. I really can't think of a worse sin for a novel to commit. This book featured what else? A princess and a surgeon. The princess in question, Georgiana, was a combat medic for her country's army and ended up losing her leg in an accident while serving, even though she hadn't been in combat at the time. She had a whole side plot about expectations from her family, including the horrifying add-in of her late brother, who had committed suicide as a result of his sexuality. They made a big deal about this plot point, and it really got to me. It was the first instance of seeing LGBTQI+ representation on our podcast, and it ended up being a young gay man who had killed himself before the start of the novel. I've got an entire rant about that in the episode if you want to track it down on the website. I don't know if the author was trying to sound progressive, but really it just felt that Georgiana's country was still stuck in their early 2000s. I also felt that the title was misleading. Even though the intended hero was an actual surgeon, he didn't really do any surgery in the novel. Instead, he ran a clinic supporting individuals who had lost their limbs. He gave them recovery, prosthetics, anything that they might need. Really, it is how the titular princess and surgeon met. But it was really by chance, if I'm perfectly honest. Edward wasn't really any one thing, but rather had relevant experiences as needed by the novel. He slipped into whatever role called for him, trying to show off how cool Georgiana was supposed to be. He is a hero of convenience, and it just reads as lazy. And don't get me started on how many medical emergencies were shoehorned into the narration just to get this novel to qualify as medical romance. That itself is a mess on its own. And I have saved the least for last on this trip of the Shelf of Shame, and that's A Bride for the Lost King from episode 22. This one is probably the worst currently on the Shelf of Shame, and where do I even begin to explain the insanity that is this book? Well, the episode itself is a good attempt, but still. A Bride for the Lost King is actually the second book in a duology, the first being His Majesty's Forbidden Temptation. That novel did not make it to the Shelf of Shame, but only barely. It had a few redeeming qualities, and I hoped that the author would have explored them to improve on the series. Oh, how wrong I was. Instead of focusing on the good characteristics of the novel, the author seems to have zeroed in on the worst aspects and blow them up to an unmanageable mess. I don't know how it was possible, but it happened. To be really frank, I hated both of the protagonists from the series, but I hated Lazarus even more than his brother Alexius. Both men were insufferable assholes, and the women in their lives served only to make them look redeemable, not allow them growth to redeem themselves, just tell them that they were actually nice guys. Spoiler alert, they were not. Lazarus straight up groomed his love interest. There's no getting around it. He said as much in the narration. I really could go on, but that's probably the greatest sin. But those were our three entries for the Shelf of Shame, and with luck, or not so much depending on your perspective, they will not have too many new companions in the year to come. Up next, let's get into the really good stuff, the Gold Star Shelf Superstars. I'll start with what was probably the sillier of the four, and that's Christmas Data Breach from episode 16. This one was pretty straightforward. A cancer researcher finds herself in the middle of a murder mystery surrounding her groundbreaking work into cancer treatments, and could only turn to her ex, who happened to be a security and protection specialist. And it takes place over the Christmas season. Did we see a lot of Christmas? No. Did I care? Heck no. Christmas Data Breach was just a fun mystery mixed with intrigue and murder, with peppermint candy shavings sprinkled on top. But if I'm being honest, going by the name alone, I didn't expect this novel to get onto the Gold Star shelf. But I've no problem eating my words. They taste absolutely fine with a splash of soy sauce and a dash of humility. Way on the other side of the silly to serious spectrum, there's A Blues Singer to Redeem Him from episode 10. This was an entry into Harlequin's historical imprint, but it wasn't what I might have expected. These days, the historical romances are all about Regency eras, and we're likely having Bridgerton to thank for that. Instead, A Blues Singer to Redeem Him takes place in 1926, not even 100 years ago, where the jazz and booze parties were overlaid on the darker realities of Jim Crow and segregation. I don't imagine that there are many romance novels that open with the Tulsa Race Massacre, but this one did. This novel was remarkable in several ways. Not only was it interracial romance, but it dealt with themes that directly influenced the romance between the couple, including the KKK. Our hero, the son of a mafia don and wanting nothing to do with the family, was struggling with the growing influence of the KKK in the town where he ran his speakeasy. Among the chaos, Evelyn walks into his life, wanting simply a job singing at his club, and he was more than happy to oblige. The novel had some rather dark moments, but really, I'll suggest it to anyone wanting to shake up their historical reads. And continuing on the historical theme, we have my two favorites currently on the Gold Star shelf, and if I was being honest, I don't think they'll get knocked off the top of my list anytime soon. They both came from the same series, so I'll lump them together here. And they are A Wolf in Duke's Clothing from episode 5 and A Most Unusual Duke from episode 19. They are the first two in the Shifters of the Beau Monde series, a historical paranormal romance series. If you like Shifters and Regency romance, boy, do I have a treat for you. There's so much that could be said for both of these novels, from the cover to the content to the crazy world building. I chose A Wolf in Duke's Clothing purely on a gut instinct. I was looking for my next read in the bookstore, and I am so very glad I took a chance on A Wolf in Duke's Clothing. First, I loved the prose. It fits so well into what I thought Regency romance should sound like, and the words brought me back to that era in a way that none of the other Regency novels that I've read had. I'm sure there are those that might find the prose tedious, but it's a huge part of why I love these novels. Next is simple enough. I'm into fantastical elements brought into the real world. Like, it's my whole jam. Adding this taste of urban fantasy into the Regency setting was just a delight. As for the stories themselves, our first heroine is still my favorite so far, Felicity. She's got a not-like-other-girls vibe going on, but not to the point where it's grotesque. Really, Felicity is only trying to make her own way in the world so that she could focus on her true passion of riding horses and developing a breeding stud to improve the lives of both horse and rider. This is my favorite of the horses trope. Felicity wanted nothing to do with getting married, and it was only going through the motions of the marriage mart in order to fulfill the requirements set by her father's will so she could inherit his estate. Right before the legal date of her inheritance, she's found by Duke Alfred, who knows that she is his only one true love. The second novel, A Most Unusual Duke, we meet Duke Arthur and his wife by arrangement, Beatrice. They have to figure out together how best to move forward with their lives as a couple, even though they don't know one another. This is a sweet novel, but the first holds a special place in my heart. What really shot these books to the top for me, though, was a slightly unusual approach to sex. First, with the Wolf Duke, Felicity had a scene where she was masturbating. I'd never seen that in a romance novel, and I'm hard-pressed to think of one that we've read since I've started the podcast. We need more of these moments. As for the unusual Duke, despite having been married once before, Beatrice was sadly not much informed on the act of sex itself. Her first marriage was not healthy, and the sex was horrible, and poor Beatrice was still in the dark on how she could actually become pregnant. Oh, she knew the bare bones basics, but her first husband was so cruel and inept that he took measures to ensure that she wouldn't bear children, leading her to believe that she was barren. So we get some wonderful scenes where Beatrice could learn about sex, explore it with her partner, and no one shamed her for not knowing. Sex isn't shameful, and we need much more upfront approaches to talking about it. And in case you were wondering, the third novel in the series, A Duke at the Door, comes out in August. I have it on pre-order, so you can expect to hear about it as soon as I have my greedy little mitts on it. These books might not seem the typical sort of erotic romance for the average reader, but in my mind, they shine above the rest. So that was our tour through the best of the best, our Gold Star shelf, and I hope to get them some more company as we get along. And really, I still can't believe it's been a year. Who knew that I would still be here reading naughty books and loving life? So thank you if you've been joining me, and I hope to see more with you. Next week we're going to be taking off, and then after that it will be a regular episode. So I hope you'll join me while we read Once Upon a Royal Summer by Terry Wilson. Thank you for joining me, readers and romance seekers, and I hope to see you once again for Hopelessly Romantic. If you like the show, please visit us at hopelesslyromanticpodcast.com. If you have questions or want to recommend a read, please email us at contact@hopelesslyromanticpodcast.com. The show is written and produced by me, Heather Songster. Our technical advisor is Kwang Yun Cho. Hopelessly Romantic is an H with K production. And it doesn't matter what you read, only that it's what you love.